Our date about a week later than usual or intended. What's up? This is Movies on Up with our slightly belated Star Trek Into Darkness / Wrath of Khan discussion episode, The Wildest Chase of the Century. If you think you know what tagline that comes from, The Wildest Chase of the Century, let us know your guess, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet directly at us at moviesonup or leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, if you are correct. And if we pick you, both of those things have to occur, then you will win our prize package this week, courtesy of Movies on Up. We are coming to you a bit later, and by we, I mean my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella.
That's me.
That's Dave. The bones to my Kirk in this scenario, as I will be helming this episode, although Dave's going to rebound strong and host the next two this week. He doesn't know that yet, but I just told him.
Well, I hosted this one last week. We lost this one last week.
Yeah.
90-some episodes. This is our first episode lost.
It wasn't so much lost.
It went into darkness.
It was cloaked like the Klingon bird of prey, which I'm sure will come up later on this episode. Dave, I found out last week, likes Klingons a lot. In addition to liking Klingons a lot, he also likes to do something else at the top of our episode. Not a Klingon, but a
bonus list.
Yes, a very subdued bonus list. Our top five sci-fi seconds into darkness, the second in the rebooted Star Trek series. So we've got our top five seconds sequels of sci-fi franchise. Number five, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Number four, RoboCop 2. Number three, Back to the Future 2. Number two, Aliens. And number one, The Empire Strikes Back. All sequels, all very good.
They were all supposed to be in space, but after Empire Strikes Back and Aliens, I ran out.
Of sequels in space.
Yeah.
This list is one of our better bonus lists. I feel like...
I like all those movies.
Three of them are really awesome. The other two are RoboCop 2 and Back to the Future 2.
RoboCop 2 is awesome.
It's all right. Something else that we thought was all right, and that's probably putting it lightly. We both like Star Trek Into Darkness. We've said that pretty much this entire year. When the movie came out, we both saw it very early, raved about it the next week, and had kind of had in mind doing a separate Into Darkness episode later on in the year. We were going to kind of tie it to Wrath of Khan. We didn't want to mention it at the time in case people didn't quite know that, spoiler alert, Benedict Cumberbatch plays Khan in that one. So we were trying to make sure we didn't ruin anything for you right out of the shoot. But right out of the shoot, something that I like to do is talk a little box office numbers right from the top. And Into Darkness, at last report, made about $462 million worldwide, $228 domestically, $234 worldwide. Had $70 million its opening weekend. It did open number one on May the 17th. The budget was $190 million. It ranks as the number 97 on the domestic all-time list. So top 100 of the most successful films of all time. Dave, do you happen to know what the number 26 or number 96 most successful film of all time was?
I should, because we talked about it last week, but I have no idea.
You've forgotten. So just give me a guess.
Alligator.
Not Alligator, but does star a cousin to an alligator. That would be Dinosaurs. The Lost World Jurassic Park is number 96. Number 98, care to guess what that might be?
That is... Event Horizon.
Not Event Horizon, but it does feature things from outer space. Aliens, it is the M. Night Shyamalan flick
Signs. I do remember that now.
Yeah, from 2002. So both close to the end of the top 100 most successful films of all time. I mention most successful films of all time. It is one of the top 100 most successful films of all time because apparently, according to Star Trek fans, it's awful. There was a Star Trek fan site that actually had voted Into Darkness the worst Star Trek film ever.
Not only was it voted the worst Star Trek movie ever by the Star Trek fans, it was voted behind Galaxy Quest. Like, they voted Galaxy Quest ahead of it.
Which, as a Star Trek movie?
If you're not counting at home, that's not a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, they kind of really went a long way to trash this movie. And, you know, like I said, Dave and I both like it. Obviously, a bunch of people liked it, too. It is the 97th highest grossing film ever. Hint, hint, it is higher than all of the other Star Trek movies.
Which that doesn't, that's a hard argument to make because the times are different.
I know,
and
inflation,
and there's some terrible,
sure.
I think it's better than Lost World, Jurassic Park 2, which sits above it. but it was critically didn't do terribly. Fans seemed to like it. Like, it wasn't one of those terrible word of mouths. Like, it made $70 million its opening weekend, and then a congested summer where there was a lot of big-time movies, it still made over $200 million. So it's not, it didn't just fall away after that first week. It did well, and there's a lot of good about it. It's a good movie.
There are a lot of good things about it, and we'll certainly get into those. But they had mentioned on this website, and I mean, I can't really remember what it was, and I know Dave doesn't care enough to tell you what it is. So Google it if you want, whatever. But, you know, they mentioned that the franchise seems broken. They're so upset at the way these reboots have gone that maybe it's time to just kill it because the franchise is broken. Now, the original Star Trek reboot that Abrams did made over $300 million. This one worldwide made over $400. So you're looking at a between two movies grossing over $700 million. Calling that broken, I don't think that jives.
No, and again, it's critically not a disaster. Fans, it's not a disaster. These are just hardcore Star Trek fans that if you put out a movie that's not Shatner and Nimoy and all that, they're not going to like it. I honestly feel like this, the people that are saying this are people that aren't going to be happy no matter what. So it's almost like, who cares?
I think you're right. Fanboys have a very specific expectation for what they feel like is their property. They're very for it to be a Star Trek movie, it has to have, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I think that these Abrams movies are not your typical Star Trek movies. They are much more of an action-adventure movie than the sci-fi space exploration of the older flicks. And I think that that's commercially a better model to have. But, you know, for the hardcore people that grew up with, you know, the television show, it's kind of a shock to their system.
Well, you know what I tell those people that grew up with the television show?
What do you tell those people?
Grow up. Like, it's not going to be the same. What's the point of doing it if it's exactly the same?
I could not agree more with you. I have that problem when people remake anything, and it's the exact same. If you're not going to put your own spin on it, if you're not going to update it, we don't need it.
I've never cared. Like, if you don't like these movies, that's fine. That shouldn't make you like the originals any less. It doesn't take anything away whatsoever. Like, I never watched the originals. Khan, I watched for this episode. That's the first one I'm familiar with the franchise. I know I get a lot of the inside jokes, but sit down and watch it, I've never liked it. So, I mean, I guess I'm disagreeing with Star Trek fans. I don't care, though. Like, it's a good movie. I don't know what you want.
I think that's it. It is a good movie. And, you know, the fact that it's called Star Trek doesn't help or hurt it in our eyes, because we're not Trekkies. We don't care. The hardcore Trekkie, Trekker, whatever you want to call them, you know, maybe they're a little bit disappointed. But clearly one person that kind of agrees with us and thinks that this is a good movie is Robert Orci, one of the guys. He was one of the writers for this one. He kind of took umbrage with the article that appeared on this website and took to Twitter to defend his movie, and I think he eventually felt bad about it and kind of tried to make amends.
Yeah, he blew up in the comment section about this article writing about how it was broken. He kind of took offense to that, which he's put a lot of work into this franchise, and it's made him a lot of money, made a lot of people a lot of money. So, yeah, he's a little sensitive about claiming it's broken, but he realized he wasn't professional, and later, when people were calling him out on Twitter for not being cool about it, he responded and said, like, yeah, I had a weak moment. So, I mean, he immediately felt bad, but I don't blame him at all for losing his cool about that.
On the one hand, I guess I don't blame him. The other hand, I feel like he probably should have seen this one coming. I mean, I think that when the original Star Trek reboot came out, I feel like these same people were around and were not happy about that. I can remember Damon Lindelof being very involved in the original Star Trek and Prometheus, and he kind of was raked over the coals for both of those, for not really jiving with the fanboys. And I think that when you do a genre picture, especially something that could be considered nerd fare, you are subject to that nerd rage that you're going to get when things aren't exactly right. Because, I mean, I'm a Star Wars nerd, and I can get pretty righteously nerd-rageous when my Star Wars isn't done the same way. So I understand where the Star Trek guys are coming from, but you're in really almost a no-win situation. You can make something that's commercially successful, you're going to piss off your core fans, or you can do it the other way and be out of a job.
I just feel like the ones that think it's so bad and claim the franchise is broke, because if I'm not saying this movie is so good, everybody has to like it. I'm not saying that, because I understand, but if you're a Star Trek fan, if you're saying it's broken, then something's wrong with you. Like, if you can't look at this and realize, like, oh, there's a lot of good about this. The cast is awesome. The action's cool. It's a good story. There's enough there.
It's an enjoyable movie.
Yeah, like, if you can't accept that, then you're trying too hard. And I think these are people that right away knew they weren't going to like it.
They like, made up people, their mind before they saw it.
There's people right now. We know nothing about Episode 7 for Star Wars. You know there are people that are going to hate that movie regardless, that are already typing up blog posts, ready to hit post the day it comes out, but they're still going to be at midnight and still just going to complain about – they're going to have the same complaints after they see the movie that they have now when we don't know anything about the movie. And that's just the feeling I get from this is it doesn't – it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same, and if it isn't the same, then it has to be bad. And I think that that's an occupational hazard for, you know, having a franchise that is as revered as Star Trek or as, you know, whatever it is, you know, whether it's the Terminator franchise or, you know, Aliens. You can throw whatever you want out there in that sort of sci-fi, I'm going to call it nerd realm, and if it's not exactly, you know, what everybody has pictured that it should be, then people are going to get angry. Maybe it's more justifiable to be angry is the way the DVD release was handled or mishandled. The DVD did release last week, DVD, Blu-ray.
That's why this episode was supposed to be last week.
I understand. But the point is still valid this week that, you know, if you were a giant nerd and you wanted all of the bonus features that would be available, you couldn't just go down to Target or Walmart or Best Buy or wherever and buy the Blu-ray. You had to buy it at multiple places to get everything, which is kind of messed up.
Every retailer had a different set of special features. And for a movie like this, people care about the special features. So this is the most exploitative DVD release I can think of in a while. It's hard enough now to get people to buy a DVD. It's hard enough to get your movie bought on DVD, let alone to do something that's trying to encourage them to buy your DVD from multiple locations. Now you're just getting greedy. And now you completely miss the point of the nature of the business right now. Like, you're just clueless. And that's why it's that killed the music industry. That kind of thought process really hurt CD sales. When CD sales were starting to dip, they did stupid stuff that was just trying to milk people's monies from them, and people caught on to that and just said, you know, you're trying to pitch us for every penny. How about you take none of my pennies? And that's kind of what this DVD release felt like, and it sucks that it's on a movie I love so much, but it just, you're not paying any attention to what's going on in the world and in the industry if this is the crap you're trying to pull.
This makes what Lucasfilm does and what Peter Jackson does with his DVD releases look like there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And anytime you can do that, you are clearly messing something up. But that's one of the very few things about Into Darkness that I think that we don't like. One of the few things that we actually think that they did mess up. Something that I know that we agree on is the way that the cast was utilized in this movie. I think, you know, they were able to use everyone more effectively than they were the first time. Outside of, obviously, your Spock, your Kirk, and I think Scotty in the first one.
Scotty kind of jumped his way into like a third player here.
Yeah. I think especially in the first one, he certainly was. This one, you know, it was more, you had Kirk and Spock and then everybody else, but kind of sharing an even playing field, which I think is more appropriate, and it was very well done. It allowed everyone to kind of shine and contribute when it made sense.
Chekhov and Harold probably got the weakest roles, but even they had their moments. And even Bones, he was kind of key in the first one, not as much in this one, but still had moments. So they gave everybody chances to kind of make a mark, and everybody did. And even Alice Eve jumping in as Carol Marcus, yeah, she was kind of misused and underused, but whatever. But everybody else, for a movie where I feel like Cumberbatch was just, every time he was on the screen, I was more excited. Like, I thought he commanded the screen, but yet, even when he wasn't on, everybody carried it. And it was so well done, and the cast, I thought, was utilized perfectly.
Everybody had, you know, their moment to kind of shine. Cumberbatch, obviously, had quite a few. We knew going into the movie that Benedict Cumberbatch was playing the villain. This, what was his name, John Harrison. John Harrison, playing some sort of a terrorist. We all knew that going in. There was some wild internet speculation that he might be playing some other character that had to be kept deep under wraps, which kind of limits as to what that could possibly be. But, you know, we do find out, obviously, in the movie that Cumberbatch plays Khan, who is, you know, one of the signature villains from Star Trek canon. And I think his Khan, what they did, I thought was very appropriate. It was, you know, kind of a multi-leveled character. They did allow him to be a somewhat sympathetic figure. And going through the entire movie, you weren't really sure if Khan was or was not a bad guy.
I love that they did that with him, because I'm familiar with the name Khan. So watching the movie, once he announces himself as Khan, like, I know he's an established bad guy. But then there's parts where he's working with Kirk, and, like, you don't know if you can trust him or not. But they did make him relatable, because all he cares about, I mean, you find out later, is his crew, his family, essentially. There's 72 others that he will do anything to ensure their safety, and he wants to cause as much havoc as he can to the people who essentially imprisoned them. So, like, he wants to bring down Marcus and the Starfleet. So you understand his motivation, you can relate to his motivation, and you don't know if you can trust him, because he does bail him out. You know, he could have let the, if it were truly just destruction, he could have let the Klingons kill Kirk and Zahura and Spock and them, but he didn't. Like, he bailed him out in awesome fashion. So I like that there was a lot more to his character, and there were a lot of levels to it, and you had a great actor who pulled off all of it.
It's one thing to give a character depth, but if the actor can't pull it off, one thing we ripped on Riddick a while ago was that character had no depth, but Vin Diesel is not the greatest of actors, so it's very difficult for him to pull off that depth. But Cumberbatch is really good, so what the writers were able to put in the character, this character of Khan, Cumberbatch did a really good job of kind of expressing, you know, the other villain, Admiral Marcus, or, you know, whatever, Master Chief Marcus, whatever he was.
RoboCop,
sure. It was another one that, you know, he kind of starts the movie as, I don't know that he's a hero, he's just a dude in Starfleet.
There.
But then he kind of turns into the heel. Like, he's, I think, even more so than Khan, he kind of was the bad guy for the sake of everything he was doing was kind of shady, underhanded, and was kind of inherently evil.
Everything he was doing justified Khan's actions. So here Khan is this crazy villain, this terrorist.
A sympathetic terrorist.
But everything he's doing is brought on by Marcus. And when you realize what Marcus's plan is, that almost makes what Khan's doing make a lot more sense. And just he just wanted war. He was a warmonger. Like, that's all he wanted to do, was essentially create war.
One of the things that I find most interesting about this movie is, at one point, you know, they talk about Starfleet being space explorers. That's the idea behind Starfleet. And you have Marcus, who's made in secret this dreadnought. I think the ship was called, like, the USS Vengeance or something. So he's got this ship that is really a weapon that he's hoping to use against the Klingons. And the thing I like about that is the idea of, you know, space exploration versus, you know, military group. And I think that on maybe a larger scale, people that are fans of the original Star Trek, when it was about space explorers, I can see where the tone of these new movies is more, you know, they're not explorers. They're kind of commandos. Now, even Kirk is, you know, engaged in these very intense and visceral, you know, fight scenes and shootouts. And it just, it's not your dad's Star Trek.
In the first one, Harold, it's established, like, he's a trained fighter. Yeah, Sulu.
Yeah.
He's a trained fighter, too. So it's like everybody, it is military. It does have a military feel. Yeah, everybody has their purpose there, but they can all handle themselves when it comes to blows.
They're experts at giving blows. Like I said, I think that's one of the main differences between this movie and the movie that we'll be talking about here in a couple minutes is the tone. This was a good action movie that I thought was pretty entertaining from beginning to end, although there were a couple times that I think there were some eye-roll-inducing moments. And I think that for the most part, they all kind of revolve around fan service and this desire to kind of reach out and connect with your hardcore Star Trek fans, so to speak.
Yeah, the con delivered by Quinto was just terrible.
It was bad.
It's an iconic moment from the original because it's Shatner doing it, and it's not iconic because it's amazing acting work. It's iconic because it's Shatner doing that. So that was bad. I didn't like old Spock in it. I didn't feel the need for Nimoy. I thought that point, that scene was 100% pointless. I liked him in the first one. I liked how they tied it together to say, hey, here's the characters, but that universe you're used to, that timeline is non-existent now. This is the same people, but different path. I liked that because it tied together the both universes and gave you a clean slate at the same time, but I didn't need it in the second one. It seemed forced.
Yeah, it put in there just because we feel like we have to have Leonard Nimoy and we got to throw him a bone.
It seemed shoehorned in there out of nowhere, and it didn't add anything. It just made me angry.
At no point I did it really advance the plot, I don't think. You were not a giant fan, you know, of using the character of old Spock, but you also weren't 100% behind the inclusion of Khan in the movie.
You sold me on it a little bit why they needed to.
I made a hell of an argument.
As a non-Star Trek guy, like, I didn't care if his name was Khan or John Harrison. Like, this genetically engineered badass, I don't care what you call him. I didn't understand the hiding of the name. Like, if you want him to be Khan, just have him introduced at the beginning when they're having the meeting, like, oh, Lili Noonan Khan or whatever his name is. I didn't understand the point of hiding the name other than we don't want people to know that Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Khan, even though it was a very poorly kept secret. It was on the IMDb
page. Or Michael
page.
Shannon is playing General Zod. It felt like the same kind of thing.
Yeah, so I guess I didn't need. But, I mean, I understand who Khan is, so when I'm seeing it and there is that moment where it's, I am Khan, like, why give him a name? Like, why, before that, like, just make it, I don't know, it just felt weird that I don't understand why he was named John Harrison just to set up the Khan reveal.
Yeah, I think that they could have gone the direction that I think you would have preferred, where he was just, you know, a very capable terrorist. And had that been the case, then I think absolutely John Harrison would have been fine. If it was just a terrorist, and then they kind of said, oh, well, his name's Khan, too, that would have felt a little bit messed up. But at the same time, you know, even when he is known as John Harrison, they mention that he's been genetically engineered or enhanced or whatever. And at that point in the Star Trek universe, it is very difficult to, you know, talk about this, you know, genetically advanced guy who's super smart and super aggressive and have it not be Khan. It would have been kind of going the long way around just not to have this iconic character in your movie. And I would have felt like, as much as it was shoehorned in for the old Spock, it would have been just as awkward not to have him in there. But I mean, either way, I don't think this would have been a bad movie had Khan not been the villain and everything else played out the same way. But I do have to admit that I had my suspicions that Cumberbatch was probably playing Khan. And when the reveal came, I thought it was pretty neat. I was much happier to see him as Khan in this movie than I was to see old Spock in the first movie. I really didn't care too much about that. You want to go back in time to a much older...
To feel the wrath of Khan.
To feel the wrath of Khan, much
feel
older
the
crew.
Wrath of Khan.
Did you just...
I was going back in time to feel the wrath of Khan.
Was that... No, that wasn't on. Actually, I liked the score for Wrath of Khan. I think actually the score for both of these movies is pretty good. The new Star Trek, I like how it kind of ends with the theme song from the show. And I think that it works as a good, it's a great sequel to what they had built in the reboot. And I think you could see where, you know, this movie could kind of launch into the 5-year space mission, which is the first series. And I like the inclusion of the old tune there as the credits roll. I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Dave liked it as well. I don't think Dave liked The Wrath of Khan quite as much. It domestically made $79 million, opened up number one on the week of June 4th, 1982, $14 million. It opened the same week as Poltergeist. Just as a little FYI, it is the number 759th highest grossing domestic film of all time. David, do you happen to know what number 758 is?
The Guardian.
It is not The Guardian. It is Cape Fear. Just for fun, 757, Planes, movie that just came out this year,
okay.
Ranks right above Cape Fear, two spots above Wrath of Khan, and do you know what is right below Wrath of Khan at number 760?
The Perfect Storm.
48 Hours.
I like that movie.
I like that movie, too. This is actually kind of an interesting grouping. I like Cape Fear an awful lot.
Yeah.
You have The Wrath of Khan, Planes, and then 48 Hours. It really makes me think a lot less of 48 Hours knowing that Planes ranks ahead of it. I know.
Inflation.
I know inflation.
30-some years of inflation.
I know 3D. I get it. It's just one of those things that, like, it's funny to put things in some kind of a context. I know it's not completely apples to apples, but Planes greater than 48 Hours. Take from that what you'd like. One of the things that jumps out to me about The Wrath of Khan, I had seen this movie when I was a kid. My dad is a Star Trek fan. I don't know.
A Trekkie,
sure. I don't think he's a Trekkie because he's not like, he likes Star Trek, we'll watch it. But, I mean, I've gone to a Star Wars convention. This man has never been to a con of any sort in his life. So I don't think he's a Trekkie. But, I mean, I was exposed to the Star Trek movies at a relatively young age. So I had seen Khan. I kind of knew what I was getting into when I rewatched it. And one of the things that jumps out, obviously, is it's a much different movie. The pace. It's a much slower paced movie.
Yeah, it is.
Knowing that, I knew what I was getting into when I watched it. But you never having seen any of the Star Trek movies, how much of a culture shock was it for you to see Wrath of Khan?
Pretty big, because for 30-some years, I've been told how awesome of a villain Khan is, and like read about how awesome of a villain Khan is, and just how great of a villain Khan was. And then I see Cumberbatch's Khan, and it's like, all right. And then I see Ricardo Montalban's Khan, and it's like,
Ricardo Montalban.
All right. I just, different movie.
I
should have watched it before I rewatched Into Darkness.
Yeah, I guess that would have been my suggestion, because there is very much of a contrast in the films.
That was not in last week's episode, and I regret losing it because of that.
That was a new one. This film was a lot closer to the tone that you get from the series. It was much more about exploration. And one of the things that I do like, and listen carefully, because I'm not going to say very many nice things about Star Trek, because those people are nerds. But one of the things that was awesome about, especially the original show, is its ability to take issues that were of cultural relevance and kind of put them in a sci-fi setting. And I think that the...
Like earworms?
Yeah, like earworms. That whole hot button issue of whether or not you should put worms in your ears. I think that they pretty much, the filmmakers, Nicholas Meyer, pretty much gave his stance on that, is it's wrong and you shouldn't do that. But the genetic experimentation angle, when you had the Genesis Project that is capable of, you know, creating life from nothing, maybe the best possible use for that kind of technology. And then you had Khan, who is kind of the opposite spectrum, end of the spectrum from that technology. I mean, this movie came out in 82 when, you know, genetic engineering was, you know, something that was science fiction, but wasn't necessarily something that people couldn't see coming in the future. So it was very much, you know, is this something we should do? Is this something we should not do? And I think that Star Trek was able to kind of explore that a bit. It's not an action movie. It is very much a science fiction movie, which tends to be a bit slower of a pace anyway. There were, however, some similarities between the two. One of the things that Dave picked up on, and I really didn't get it until you mentioned it, then absolutely it makes a lot of sense, is when we first meet Khan in Wrath of Khan and when we see him on the Klingon homeworld in Into Darkness.
They're dressed the same. Like, they're dressed in this weird-looking Star Wars outfit. So Khan, the first time you meet him in Wrath of Khan, he's wearing this. And then the first time Kirk is essentially face-to-face with him, he's wearing essentially the same thing, which I like that. Like, I like little stuff like that because it just shows they are paying attention, because that's such a small thing that nobody's going to care if you don't do that. But to see it was kind of cool.
That was very much a subtle nod that if you want to, that's how fan service should be done. You know, it's something that even Dave, not being a fan, picked up on it. I think that, you know, hardcore Trekkies probably did too, and they probably would have enjoyed that. I think that it adds to the movie having that, you know, being pointed out to me, but it definitely didn't take anything away with it being in there, like seeing
Spock,
Zachary Quinto yell Khan.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrible. You also had, you know, Khan being commandeering Federation ships, the Vengeance, I guess, in Into Darkness, and
The Reliant,
in Wrath of Khan. So it was, you know, you got that kind of ship-to-ship battle, which I think that the original Star Trek movies really kind of revolved around that. I think one of the reasons that Khan is such an iconic villain for Star Trek is that they don't have anything else. They don't have a Darth Vader. They don't have, you know, a Freddy Krueger. I'm just thinking of iconic villains, you know what I mean? Like, somebody that is the personification of evil in this particular universe. And Khan was a charismatic character, whereas in the original motion picture, the villain was this, like, gaseous cloud that was coming to presumably destroy Earth. Not a lot of personality there. You had another alien race, I think in 4, that was coming to destroy the Earth that they couldn't communicate with. They had to go back in time and pick up some whales so that they could communicate with this thing. Again, it doesn't lead itself to, you know, having a conflict between Kirk and, you know, another main character. So I think that having Khan helps out with that. One of the other, I guess, similarities between the two movies is, you know, you have the death, quote unquote, of a lead character in Wrath of Khan. It was Spock that bites the dust, and they took a little bit of a different spin on it in Into Darkness when it was Captain Kirk.
They took a different spin. It gets there the same way. In Wrath, Spock punches, I believe it's Bones, or he takes Bones out with some sort of
Vulcan
thing to do it, and then in Into Darkness, Kirk takes out Scotty to go in there by himself, and they both die from radiation poisoning.
In 1982, when they killed Spock, I thought that was pretty impactful. You know, the series was over at that point. Really, any of your characters could have been in peril, because there's no guarantee that if you have a Star Trek, if there even was going to be one, you know, that Spock had to appear. So I think that, and I mean, they even couch it in that movie as, like, remember, maybe he's not dead. Like, that you get that in Wrath of Khan before you even get to the third one, when the search for Spock.
The search for Spock.
Right. But I thought that scene was pretty well done. I mean, as a kid, I definitely thought Spock died, and I was pretty sad about that. But not too sad, because Spock wouldn't have wanted it that way. In Into Darkness, I kind of felt like they telegraphed it. You see right at the beginning of the movie that Khan's blood has the ability to heal the little girl. And then...
Noel Clark's daughter.
Yes. And it also has the ability... Bones makes a statement about how his cells regenerate faster than anything else he's ever seen. He's got to get to the bottom of it and find out why. He injects this Tribble, which I thought was a little too much fan service. Maybe I liked that.
I didn't think that was too much, because they weren't like a focus. It just happened to
focus,
be there.
But it was just,
and
like,
I know what Tribbles are. Like, yeah. Even I know what Tribbles are. I thought that was cool. Like, oh, hey, there's a Tribble. Trouble with Tribbles.
Trouble with Tribbles. Yeah.
Yeah, I got 99 problems, and most of them are Tribbles.
Well, apparently you would have 100 problems, because this one dead Tribble kind of comes back to life. And you could see where there's no reason that they would mention the regenerative powers of Khan's blood if it weren't to bring back a character that died. And at that point, I was kind of thinking, I thought they were going to do Spock again. But when they switched it up to Kirk, it was pretty obvious that he wasn't actually going to die.
Especially because it was set up at the beginning, where Spock really didn't care about dying or not. Like, he was willing to die at the beginning. So it would have been nice to see. I thought it was leading up to putting him in the same situation, and what's he do this time? Because you had that arc with him and Zahura, or Yathura. I don't know her name.
Uhura.
Whatever. Zoe Saldana.
Sure.
That's why I stick with
the
actor name.
Avatar. The blue chick from Avatar.
Yeah.
Colombiana.
But yeah, so I it would have been a weird arc into that arc there to see how it went. But I do like that was basically, I don't know, I like the arcs in Into Darkness, because all the characters had their own. Like, you had the Kirk and Spock friendship, which in Into Darkness is still trying to be formed, whereas in the Wrath of Khan, it's like 20 years old already.
Yeah, I mean, they had already been through the ringer a time or two. This is, I think it's interesting in that, you know, you have what are similar movies in that, you know, they both have the same kind of villain. There are a lot of plot points. There are a couple plot points that are the same, but they take place at such diametrically opposite ends of the careers of the characters. The reboot is still dealing with a very young crew that hasn't gone out on their voyage. But in Wrath of Khan, you know, they've been through it.
They're
all
getting too old for this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, they're like Lethal Weapon.
For this ship.
Well done. You know, they're kind of coming out of retirement, so to speak, and I think that, you know, there is enough where these movies can kind of coexist and be different, that you can like one and the other doesn't ruin it, because Into Darkness is not trying to do the same thing as Wrath of Khan. So I feel like, you know, they can both live in their own space, and that's fine.
I guess I just didn't see Khan as that terrifying. Like, we talked about...
He was pretty inept.
We talked about Cumberbatch as being sympathetic, and you can relate to what he's doing, and he's very well thought out and meticulous. Montecon was just 100% revenge-driven. Like, all he wanted to do was take care of Kirk, and that was it. So the motivation there wasn't that good, and you never really got a grasp of his... They did a really good job selling Cumberbatches. He's really strong, and he's really smart. Like, he's genetically engineered. You really never got that with Montauban, minus a couple of scenes that just seemed thrown in there to show it.
You're right, but I feel like as far as the intellectual side, it's going to sound like I'm kind of covering for the movie, and maybe I am, but that was sort of set up in the episode that he was on. Now, granted, that was, you know, 15, 20 years before the movie, but it wasn't necessarily the first introduction to Khan. They were kind of operating off the fact that you know who this is already, but in the reboot, they were kind of trying to reintroduce that character. Would I like to have seen more to make you recognize Khan as a threat? Yeah, I guess I would have, but again, different movies for different times for different audiences. Now, obviously, after Wrath of Khan, they go in search for Spock and then in search of whales and whatever else.
And five.
Six, they go to prison for apparently shooting up a Klingon ship. There are a lot of Klingons in six, I think, Dave. You'd like that one. Because it seems like that's where you want the new, when there is going to be the Star Trek III.
What Into Darkness did is it sets up, like, I generally like the bad guy to die. I like that closure.
But you love Benedict Cumberbatch
so
hard.
I love that they kept Cumberbatch alive because there's still 72 others of him. And this one guy was such a thing that if you give him and 72 more of him, I want to see that fight. But not in three, because you set up a Klingon relationship. And I think the way this franchise is going, like, you know, the Klingons is bad guys, but there's not that one, like, dominant Klingon. But the way these movies are setting up, it's going to be like that. Because you were saying the original ones, Khan was, like, one of the only faces of, like, evil. But Eric Bana was awesome in the first Star Trek as the Romulan, whatever his name was. And then Khan is the face of evil in this one. So you know if they're doing all-out war with the Klingons, there's going to be a face to the Klingons, which I'm excited for. I want to see a Klingon war. And three, and then four, bring Cumberbatch back. Maybe set up at the end of three, have it Empire Strikes Back type ending to where, like, oh, they're getting beat. So then we need to wake up Cumberbatch and his crew to fight the Klingons. And then, uh-oh, everything's going bad. That's where I want to go with the next two.
Maybe we should send those ideas to Robert Orky.
Yeah.
Because apparently he can't write a good Star Trek movie. He needs all the help he can get. Yeah. Hit us up. Movies on Up on the Twitter. Send us a direct message. Or you can like us on Facebook.
There's places it can go. And a little bit of me worries about director. If the studio picks, I'm going to be less interested because some of the names the studio has thrown up, I'm not on board with. But Abrams is endorsing Rupert Wyatt from Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Like, I'm fine with that. I think he could do something cool with it. I'm really excited for the third one. It does worry me a little bit that Abrams isn't on board, but he's built such a good groundwork already.
I don't have any reason to believe, you know, that I think he's trying to stay on board as a producer or something, is he?
Yeah.
Not? Yeah. So, I mean, he's still going to, I think, have enough input to make sure that the series goes in what I think, and what I think you think as well, is a good direction. I don't think, you know, that there's going to be a noticeable letdown. I guess the Star Wars, it always takes about 45 minutes for me to start saying Star Wars instead of Star Trek. But I don't think that the Star Trek fans that are already pissed are going to come around for the third one, but they'll still see it. And
oh,
it'll be
they're still
going to
see it, and they're going to complain about it. But they already hate it now, and they're going to have the same complaints after they see it that they do now.
Yeah, so we don't...
So who cares?
Don't worry about those people, because you're going to get their money anyway, regardless. Regardless of what movie we talk about, we try and give you a bonus watch this. And what we are going to do this week is a bonus watch this for pick someone out of the cast of Three Men and a Baby, directed by Mr. Spock.
Leonard Nimoy.
Not directed by Zachary Quinto.
No. Yeah. I am going with Runaway, starring my favorite of the three men, Tom Selleck. This movie was awesome. Like, this is, we talk about remakes. This is one that I think could be updated and made awesome. Tom Selleck, Gene Simmons is the bad guy. Robotic spiders that are poisoning people. What's not to like about that? It doesn't hold up super great. There's still cool parts about it, but it's got some 2013 pacing issues. But I would love to see an update, but I still like the original because Selleck.
Yeah, Selleck and Gene Simmons acting is gold. Mine is a movie I've talked about quite a bit. He stars in a vignette. Ted Danson does in Creepshow, one of the cooler ones involving burying folks on the beach as the tide comes in. Creepshow, I love that movie. It is definitely my favorite of those kind of anthology horror movies. Like, it's one of the granddaddies of them. This is one of the ones that sticks out to me the most about that movie. So I think it's one of the best parts of one of my favorite movies.
This doesn't just stick out as part of this movie. I think of that whole...
That whole genre
yeah. of anthology movies. This one sticks out a lot.
Yeah, I think so. If you haven't watched Creepshow for any of the other reasons I've said to watch it when it got brought up on our Halloween episodes last week, or, I don't know, any of the times I've talked about it before, maybe you'll watch it because it stars Becker, or at least part of it has Ted Danson in it. That is going to do it for our first episode of this week. We are going to be back for two more episodes because we owe you one from last week. We are going to be doing our fantasy film ball draft here very shortly, where Dave and I will give you our five films that will make up our fantasy film ball team. You guys have until September the 31st to get your picks in. We're going to explain the scoring. It's been retooled a little bit this year. We'll explain that here on our next episode. We'll also put up a blog post about it, so you'll be able to refer directly to that. Send us in your stuff, because we'd really like to have you participate. I think we had about a dozen folks last year. We'd like to have even more this year. I think it's a really fun game. I think this year it'll be a little closer than
the
it was
rules
last year.
Are a little different this year, which we'll get into. Also, that's coming later this week. Next week, it's probably not as big deal to you as it is to us. Next week is our 100th episode. That's kind of why we're doing three this week instead of saying, just screw the one we lost last week. So it would throw off the numbers. Our second episode next week is our 100th episode. If you have ideas for what you want to see in our 100th episode, or just want to email us about our 100th episode, go for it, because we don't know what we're doing for it yet.
Nope, it's right around the corner, and we have no idea. We do know that our third episode this week, maybe it'll be our second. I don't really know what order they're going to go up. This one will go up first, but there also will be our film discussion episode for this week will be Shame. There are a couple movies that we talked about coming out this fall and winter, Don John being the first of which. Or no, thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing, and Don John are back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, those are the sex addiction movies of this year, the sex addiction movie of...
last year.
Yeah, last year. Shame, seemingly quite a different tone than these two. But Dave and I will take a look at that. Dave will always take an excuse to take a look at Michael Fassbender, and we do see an awful lot of them.
Whole lot of them.
And we'll tell you all about it later on this week. So until then,
keep it up.